This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner is Wes Durham. He is no longer in Cartersville, Georgia today. He is on the road. Wes, how are we doing? Everything okay? Mom's rocking?
Everybody's good, Pack. Yep. Thanks to Ken Cleary and the folks here at Carolina for setting me up this morning. I'm actually on the road because I'm going to spend some time today on a project with ACC Commissioner John Swofford. So looking forward to sitting down with the commissioner to reflect on nearly 25 years of administration of this conference, but also an unbelievable athletic life and intercollegiate athletics too. So looking forward to doing that, but great to be with you guys this morning. And mom's good. Miss Jean said, tell you hello. And she said to behave yourself, Pack.
Well, excuse me? I mean, I never leave the house. I can't even get into trouble. I even went
But you're in the real estate business. Well, she's concerned about your move to real estate.
Well, there's some serious truth in that. I also played last night the, I think it was the Mega Millions. Yeah, the Mega Millions last night. The numbers selected were 11, 15, 24, 60, 70, and 07. And you'll be glad to know one of the six hit. And I hate to tell you, I'm now 12 of 144. I've now fallen behind MJ Walker. MJ Walker, 46 of 50 from the free throw line, shooting 92%. My inaccuracy rate in selecting lottery numbers now under 92% at 91.7. So I picked the Kobe number last night. Did not help me. Wasted $2. And I'm now trailing MJ Walker. But hopefully MJ plays tonight in Florida State jumping on Miami. So we'll see what the numbers are tomorrow.
Has Chuck Walsh, the venerable basketball sports information director at Florida State University, is he aware of this comparison we're going to have going down the stretch of the regular season?
I'm not aware of that. Even though I will tell you, Chuck got some serious airtime ABC broadcast because our man MJ Walker got injured, got elbow to the noggin and got knocked out. And Vital and the boys are giving Chuck Walsh, as rightfully so, a ton of love on the air Saturday. And really, while we bring that up, a shout out to really all the SIDs because it has been SID Love Week. And seriously, we couldn't do what we do without the SID. So that's a total shout out to everyone. And you know who you are. It'd take us 3 hours to mention everybody that makes, whether you're a broadcaster, hosting the show, or whatever the case may be, look good with great information and being totally professional across the board. So a shout out to all the men and women in that profession taking care of business. Oh, did my man Wes disappear? All right, Wes disappeared on me. I was just going to say, I was checking my connection to see if I unplugged myself, but I did not. But we'll get Wes figured out up there in Chapel Hill. Speaking of North Carolina, we'll get to the Heels win on the road against Pittsburgh, but we'll first start with Duke and Georgia Tech. One of the things we talked about yesterday on the show going into the ball game was, Duke, will they be aggressive? Will there be a different mode of operation to see them attack Georgia Tech? I mean, Coach K talked a lot about the game after Louisville that, hey, you know what? We're just getting killed on the free throw line. We got to do better defensively. We got to be able to attack the basketball. You know what? Guess what? Here's what we found out last night. Duke was on attack mode against Georgia Tech last night. The end of the day, free throws 22-5 in favor of Duke. They went after Georgia Tech, right? Jackets accepted, shot a bunch of threes, taking a bunch of shots from outside. Duke went at the basket, right? Totally different mindset. I thought Duke very aggressive, went into a man-to-man right out from the get-go as opposed to the zone. You could tell some adjustments that were made by Coach K after their game against Louisville, and a game that, quite frankly, they really needed to win. So I think I got my man Wes Durham back. Wes, I don't know if you heard it or not, but I thought Duke was much more aggressive last night as opposed to what we've seen here in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, one of the things we touched on yesterday, Pac, was, you know, how was Duke going to handle the ball game? Because Georgia Tech didn't really have a center. I mean, Moses Wright is a 6'9 player who does a lot of stuff inside, but the reality of it is, you know, with Jalen Johnson and Moses Wright, what kind of matchup would we get there at Georgia Tech's end of the floor? Both teams were tending to play zone. But would Duke be aggressive on the drive and kick? Would they do things like that? I thought they got a lot of stuff in that you know, that 8-foot halo, if you will, around the basket. Second thing is this too. I thought they did an excellent job, not a good job, an excellent job limiting second chance opportunities by Georgia Tech. You could probably count them in one hand last night. And Jalen Johnson showed you all the tools again last night, didn't he? Just very, very smooth. He and Matthew Hurt, one of the things we touched on, how long was it going to take for those guys to get comfortable on the floor? That happened last night. You see they combined for all but 13 of Duke's second half points. I thought DJ Stewart set the table for him, Pac, which was important. And then the two bigs went to work in the second half for Coach K last night.
Yeah, and again, Duke got up to a comfortable double-digit lead, and Georgia Tech, to their credit, made a run with really, if you didn't see the game, with basically, I don't know, 90 seconds to go, buck 30, buck 40. This thing was 68 apiece. It was anybody's game. And there was a back and forth in really the last 4 to 5 minutes that you weren't sure who was going to take care of business here. I mean, Johnson made some great plays. Hurt made some shots. Alvarado was out of sight. He put up 26 last night. Moses Wright had a solid game as well, going for 12 and 14. So it was an entertaining game in a sense. I really thought there was pressure on Duke to have to respond. And I just thought the aggressive nature of their approach on both ends of the floor, offensively attacking, defense played the man as opposed to going to that passive zone. I thought you could definitely tell that Coach K, since the Louisville game, made some adjustments and said, hey, listen, let's go. All right, we may lose the game, but we're going to be at least aggressive and move forward on that front. And they win the game last night, one that they had to win. And I'll just say one other thing for folks that watched the game, or if you didn't, I thought it was very telling at the very end when Duke knew they were going to win the game with 10 seconds to go and they're shooting a couple free throws. And there was a shot of Coach K really almost ecstatic. And, you know, again, normally he's won 18 trillion games. And you could tell that was an important win for their team. And, I mean, he was really fired up. He was giving you the fist and high five and everybody showing a ton of emotion, which you normally don't see from him. And I just thought his staff reacted, his players certainly reacted. I think it just emphasizes how important that game was last night. Duke had to show some signs of life, and I thought they did.
Yeah, I agree with you. Last night, Mike Krzyzewski talked about the differences last night from Saturday's loss at Louisville.
So I thought we had good poise at the end. And not that we were rattled or anything at Louisville, but we're just we worked as a unit better tonight, and again, it's a young team, so hopefully we can continue to do that.
Coach, it's always a young team at Duke. It's always a young team at Kentucky. I mean, it's the world of the one and dones. That's tag, you're it. That's the way it works. But Wes, I think your point with Jalen Johnson and Matthew Hurt cannot be emphasized enough, because in the second half, those two dudes were really good. And Jalen Johnson had a stretch when Georgia Tech made their run that he just kind of said, hey, kind of like the Pitt game, get on my back, let's go. And again, if you're Georgia Tech, I know 2004, the last time you won there, Georgia Tech had their chances last night late. But I thought Duke was better down the stretch than Georgia Tech when it really mattered the most. But for the Jackets, tough back-to-back losses at Virginia, at Duke. No shame in losing either one of those guys on the road. But they had a chance to steal one of those, and unfortunately weren't able to pull it off. But Alvarado was great, man. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, Jose Alvarado, very good last night. I thought the thing that – did they get really good quality looks? Duke had something to do with that. But Alvarado did a great job last night, once again, kind of driving this team. And Pac, he's the kind of guy now, as a senior in this league, he's starting to carry guys with him a little bit, I mean, Parham hit a big shot for him on a three with the clock running down last night. Needless to say, Wright's had a really good year for him. I think Usher's vastly improved. Now it's incumbent upon Georgia Tech with Florida State coming to Atlanta this weekend. You talk about an interesting stretch, Virginia, Duke, Florida State for Josh Pastner. He survives this, we may need to look at their second half, kind of see what they've got remaining in the ACC, because they're an interesting candidate right now. The two early losses, Georgia State and Mercer, lost at Florida State and Tallahassee. Now the other losses have been Virginia, Duke, and here come the Noles again on Saturday. Does Georgia Tech need to find a win, a pronouncing win, to maybe move up the ladder a little bit in consideration? But an interesting night for Georgia Tech. Meanwhile, let's don't forget about Duke. Clemson comes to Cameron this weekend, right?
Right.
How about that?
You know, you went through Georgia Tech's schedule. I was making some crazy notes with all this stuff. And again, here's Duke's schedule coming up. Clemson Saturday, at Miami Monday. The good old-fashioned light blue, dark blue, February 6th with the Heels, and then Notre Dame. And, you know, we kept harping on the fact people want to put dirt on Duke's grave. You never do that in January. Guys won too many games. They got too many star players with Hurt and Johnson, and they're starting to figure it out. So Duke still got time to turn this thing around, but they really needed to win that game last night. I go back to Coach K's emotion at the end of that game. To me, was very telling how important that was. But you mentioned the schedule and so forth with Georgia Tech. Now, I was just thinking with Clemson, we'll talk about the Tigers game with Louisville later on in the show, but they go Virginia at Georgia Tech at Florida State in this crazy slide, and then they've got coming up their next three, Louisville tonight at Duke and then North Carolina. So you could say they play six straight against arguably the six best teams in the league. Hey, it's the way it works. You can't hide in this league. You got to go play people eventually and do your thing. But I'll say one other thing about Georgia Tech. Yesterday on off campus, I had Greg McDermott, who's the outstanding coach at Creighton, and they've got a bunch of juniors and seniors, and they're ranked 17th in the country, and they're getting ready to go on the road. And he was talking about how important it is this particular year to have experience. He said, you know, when you go through a pandemic and when March, when everything shut down, the lack of practices and what we had in the fall, and you can't really schedule accordingly, and, you know, practices are totally different now. And he said that the ability to have experienced players is such a humongous advantage, and he knows he's got it. And you start thinking about what Georgia Tech has experience-wise. That's one of the reasons I think if you're a Jackets fan, yeah, you're bummed out that you went LL on the road against Virginia and Duke and had a chance in both. But you know what? Experience-wise, Georgia Tech's in a pretty good spot. They've got guys that have been down that road, and I think that's going to pay off for Josh Pastner moving forward. I really do.
Well, and here's the thing, though. I would agree with that. I think they also have to take advantage of it.
That's right.
They're number three in the KenPom experience ranking. You've got to take advantage of it. You've got to maximize this going down the road here a little bit. That's why it may be behoove us first of next week to take a look at the schedule and maybe see once again. We know Clemson's second half is, you know, at least on paper, easier. Okay? Now, the Tigers are running the gauntlet right now and coming off a COVID pause, which has, you know, caused some issues for a lot of people as well, except Florida State, apparently. But the idea of where Georgia Tech is, can they take advantage of this? I think a real factor going forward, not just for this Georgia Tech team, but also the next one as well, because you got Alvarado and Wright as seniors. That's a, you know, those are two veteran guys that are doing a lot for that team, and they've got to answer kind of going forward off of this as well.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
By the way, before we get to North Carolina and Pitt,
yes,
we had a question from the Lumberjacks yesterday about can NC State and Louisville on the women's side get to Monday, ranked 1 and 2? And we both have that same funny feeling right now. Last night, Louisville played Miami, and I thought they'd be okay. But let me tell you something, man. Louisville is living on the edge. They survived Wake Forest, where Dana Evans does Dana Evans things with 8 seconds to go in the game. And Miami scared the you-know-what out of Louisville last night. And the Lady Cards held on for a 3-point win. They get North Carolina tomorrow in a busy week. NC State's on the road at dangerous Virginia Tech, who plays everybody close. Listen, it's going to be a struggle to get to undefeated with these two, but they keep finding ways to win games, right? At the bottom line is scoreboard. Yep. And for Louisville's ladies last night, Jeff Walls and company, it is about scoreboard, but it was another close call.
What, last two ball games for Louisville, they've won by a combined, what, 5-6 points, right?
That's it.
I mean, and now NC State, who needed the buzzer the other day to get Virginia Tech, now goes to Blacksburg again in one of those, almost like an NBA game, home and away, if you will. So we'll see what happens on Thursday night ahead of Monday night's title fight, if you will, at the Yum Center between between number two NC State and number one Louisville. But Dana Evans was great. Elizabeth Dixon had 21 to lead the Cards. So Jeff Walz's team moves on, and now they're ready to play Monday night. Can NC State match them? We will see. We will see. Let's jump to Pittsburgh last night. Carolina went on a 10-0 run pack in the first half, and got to be honest, Pittsburgh played with the edge, played with the toughness, but just could not find enough bodies to take care of Carolina inside. And Armando Bacot paced the big three again. Tar Heels win 75-65, but, you know, led by 16 at one point in the second half, and Pittsburgh cut it down to about 7 or 6, Mark, but couldn't get any closer.
Yeah, I think they got within 5, but this was North Carolina's game, though, and I was impressed with the Heels. The big three inside, and Pitt just couldn't match up, and who can? I mean, North Carolina's front court is talented, and they're playing better and better and better. And they're also getting production from other dudes, too, which really makes North Carolina one of those teams that's on a pretty good run right now where you take a snapshot. Really, the only game they've lost here in the last 7 was a game at Florida State, which you could say was their best game in terms of performance-wise. No, again, no shame in losing to Florida State. They've only won 21 straight against ACC teams at home. But I kind of like where North Carolina's going right now. They seem to have a momentum about them that they're starting to understand how the game's played, right? And, you know, there were some times in December you'd watch Roy Williams on the sideline and he had that look on his face like, man, what are we doing? Like, how much work do we have here? You can definitely see the improvement with North Carolina. And I think when we do accounting tomorrow, accounting is going to be interesting. Now, listen, we got 4 ACC men's games tonight, which will affect all this stuff. We know about Virginia. We know about Florida State. But I think accounting is going to get totally messed up tomorrow. I think we're going to come back, and you won't know mine, I won't know yours till tomorrow, but we could have some teams make some serious moves in 1 week. North Carolina is one of them.
I agree with you. And some good teams are going to tumble, let's be honest.
Yep.
A couple teams who are really pretty good, but because of who they're playing, are probably going to tumble down a little bit.
Yep.
So you speak about Carolina and the improvement of the big three. Armando Bacot, after the ball game, talked about not just what it's been like recently, but what may be the difference from last year to this year.
Last year was kind of more like we just felt outmatched, like teams were just actually better than us. But like this year, I feel like from a talent standpoint of view, like I feel like we can compete with anybody.
All right, so Bacot paced Carolina last night, but here's the other element. We can talk about the Bacot-Brooks-Sharp combination at the offensive end of the floor. But last night, we probably also ought to tip their hat a little bit on what they did defensively. Justin Champagne ended up with 23-10 last night, but Bacot and Brooks and Sharp and the rest of Carolina held Justin Champagne to just 9 field goal attempts last night. Now, how much of that was what Carolina did defensively? How much of it was what maybe Pittsburgh forced themselves into at the offensive end of the floor? We'll talk about that and hear from Jeff Capel in just a second. Pat, Bacot's making a move, though. He's making a move as a player in the ACC as we get to the midway point and on into the second half of the season.
I just think the bigs inside are starting to figure it out, too. I mean, I to watch teams improve, to me, is one of always the fun things about what we do for a living. Whether we're talking football or basketball, you know, what Virginia looked like a month ago when the Zags are running them off the build and running out of the gym versus what you see now in Virginia, night and day. I think North Carolina's a night and day. I mean, you saw the Heels early struggle. And again, why wouldn't you? Given with the pandemic, nobody's played. Practice schedules are whacked out. Nobody's had non-conference games of note. So teams are starting to find their rhythm by playing games. But I thought North Carolina inside, they just overwhelmed Pittsburgh last night in the paint. And when you start talking about the big three with Brooks, Bacot, and Sharp, went 19 of 26 from the field. And let me tell you something, from the field meant from me to my computer. They dominated inside. And and Pitt really just didn't have any answers. And Justin Champagne continues to play great. But you know what? If you're Jeff Capel and company, your best player, arguably the best player in the league, has to take more than 9 shots in the game.
Well, interesting you bring that up, because it was evident last night Champagne was getting shots, but was he getting enough? Fair question, and after the ball game, Coach Capel asked about that.
We do. We absolutely do. And again, we have to run our offense better in order to do that. We have to be able to execute. We have to be able to get into entries and get the ball where we want to get it to. They did a good job. North Carolina did a good job of taking us out of some of our stuff today.
All right, let me go back to a point here, Pac. Justin Champagne, when he says they've got to run their offense better, their offense can't be the three-man weave at about 20 feet from the basket, and then all of a sudden Xavier Johnson, you know, drops an 18-footer up on the iron or something. Or they kick it around and Audis Toney slashes into traffic and tries to get something up on the glass. There's where Carolina impacted the game a little bit from their standpoint. Look, Carolina, here's the other thing. Give the Tar Heels credit for this. What do we say about Pittsburgh? They play tough. They play with an edge. They value every possession in terms of its, you know, of its impact, right? That's what Jeff Capel's teams have done. And now they've grown to a point where they're competitive really at both ends of the floor. But the issue last night was Carolina matched some of that last night, I thought, against Pittsburgh. Carolina brought an edge and a toughness to the game that helped them. And when they had more bigs than Pitt, how'd they win the game? They won inside. I mean, not that the perimeter guys didn't play great, but Carolina won where they had an advantage on the floor last night. That ought to be scary because this is the group, the untapped potential we talked about, now starting to flourish. Brooks, like we talk about, Hurt and Johnson learning to play together. Brooks, Baycott, and Sharp are learning to play together for Coach Williams.
100% right. I think one of our questions yesterday from the Lumberjacks was Champagne versus Brooks and Baycott. And right. We had to pick. And I think I said yesterday, I will take the two bigs versus the great Champagne. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, you know, number one, foul trouble, you didn't know. But, you know, when you have two talented bigs, right, I'll take two against one. And last night, it was really three against one. And, again, Justin Champagne has done nothing other than, I think, reinforce that when you start talking about ACC Player of the Year, he is absolutely 100% positive in the conversation, without a doubt. And I thought was terrific. But North Carolina's bigs, and the way the Heels have now won 6 of 7 and kind of starting to look the part. Now, I'm not going to put you, if you're a North Carolina fan, I'm not putting you in the Virginia-Florida State category yet. But I like the direction North Carolina's heading in right now. They're playing good basketball.
Yeah, no doubt. So keep an eye. Carolina, by the way, off till next Tuesday night when they travel to Clemson. Every time we turn around, Clemson's playing somebody.
Poor Brad Brownell. I mean, like I said.
He's never coming back on this show.
Brad's like, hey, wait a minute. Am I the only one that gets to play Florida State, Virginia, North Carolina, Duke, Louisville? Am I the only guy that plays these teams? I play them every week, it seems like. Crazy.
Brad's got to be thinking, wait a second, I'm playing the Lakers and then I'm playing Clemson. Yeah. What am I doing? I'm playing Golden State, I'm playing the Lakers, I play Portland, then I go to the West Coast. I was just on the West Coast.
Yeah, I've seen Florida State like 6 times already. Can I play somebody else? I mean, it is crazy. Again, the schedules, you never know how this stuff falls, especially given the postponements and cancellations, and you flip this, and you know they could be playing Boston College tonight, but they're not. They're playing Louisville. So this is a stretch. I'm telling you, they're going to play 6 straight against arguably the 6 best teams in the league coming off, you know, a pause. So that's a bad break, but you got to go strap it on and play, man. No excuses. Got to go play.
Are we going to have like a moment on the show for like the next 10 days where we just take a knee for Brad Brownell and go deep in prayer? I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah, Brad's probably looking around going, when do we play Boston College and Wake? Not that these are easy games, but I'd like to see a Miami-BC Wake Forest couple weeks instead of this Louisville at Duke, at Carolina, at Virginia, Florida State. I mean, it really is nuts, but it is what it is. But, you know, despite the Pitt men losing last night, there was good news in Pittsburgh, and that is the Pitt women went on the road and won at Clemson last night. So give them a shout out as well. That was a good W.
Yeah, Amanda Butler, who joined us on the program yesterday, her team takes a tough loss, 79-69. By the way, they went orange and gold, or purple and gold yesterday on the floor. That was a nice touch.
Kelly Gramlich special. That's a Kelly Gramlich special. She is totally into color coordination.
Yep.
Fake ficus trees in the corner. And, man, you give me some color on that broadcast. She is all for it. That was a Kelly special last night.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
I don't want to do accounting tomorrow. I just decided during the break. I really have no interest in accounting tomorrow. So
No. We got four tonight that's going to have a major. You can't. This is not one of those.
I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to take the abuse. I don't want to take the.
The abuse is the best part. I live for the abuse. I love it because I just sit there and I will. I got to be honest with you. I didn't see it last week, and I forgot to do it. But I normally do it all the time whenever that's published on whatever social media we do on and on. But I get a kick out of people. They go, "Well, that one boy over there, he's an idiot. I mean, doesn't he understand Kentucky's not in the ACC?" I mean, it's like. You folks have no clue with what you're talking about, and that's fine.
If you see the show, you don't get accounting. That's what I keep telling people. You have to watch the show to understand the accounting.
Yeah, you got this. The Sweet 16 spot is kind of a running joke, and for folks that don't see the show, they'll go, "Well, doesn't that one guy understand that those folks aren't even in the conference? He picked a football team for a basketball poll. That guy must be a moron." I mean. I get a kick out of it. They have no idea. But we will try our best tomorrow with accounting.
Here's the issue with accounting tomorrow. We have talked about, like, Clemson, and we've mentioned the schedule. Well, here come the Tigers now hosting Louisville tonight, right?
Right.
They've not won since January the 5th. Steve Forbes joined us on this show yesterday, coach at Wake Forest, doing a fine job, coming off a win, right? Now, all of a sudden, he's going to Raleigh. NC State hasn't won in 2021.
Right.
What are we doing here? These are good teams, Pac. These are really good basketball teams. But, you know, again, you get Louisville and Clemson, a game that got pushed back rather than pushed forward. And, oh, great, here. On January 4th, both Pac and West ranked State, Clemson 2-3 in accounting.
Let me tell you something. And as they should have been ranked, because at the time, NC State had been playing good basketball, and Clemson had an incredible December. I mean, I will remind people, you know, they've got to win against Florida State. They got to win against Alabama, who's in the top 10. They'd beaten Mississippi State. They'd beaten Purdue. They'd beaten Maryland. I mean, the resume as of January the 4th was pretty strong if you're a Clemson guy, right? And it's still good. I mean, the good news for Clemson is, hey, despite the last three, which have been absolute train wrecks, getting outscored by 72 after a pause, the body of work in December still stands. Unfortunately for NC State, there was a game against St. Louis. And again, the Billikens were ranked in the top 25 this week and played their first game in over a month and lost last night. But your body of work matters. And everybody's going to go through ebbs and flows of a season unless you're Gonzaga or Baylor or Villanova. But, you know, for teams like Clemson and NC State and Duke last night, the object now is you got to start winning some games. And it begins tonight for these teams, tonight.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Clemson-Louisville. It's a 9 o'clock ball game. The thing you look at here is, and I'll go back to what you've said, the early body of work, the unranked body of work, if you will, right? The Tigers played well. They're in a situation where now all of a sudden the strength of the opponent has, in all honesty, caught up to them off the COVID pause. And there's no let-up. Louisville tonight, Duke this weekend, then Carolina next Tuesday, we've talked about. But look at ranked Clemson versus unranked Clemson.
It's crazy. Jekyll and Hyde.
Yep.
That's hard to do, that right there. The good news for Clemson, I guess, tonight is that they're unranked.
Yeah,
I mean, seriously, they are 3-7 all time against Louisville. Of their three wins, two of those three wins were when Louisville was ranked in the top 25. Well, guess where Louisville's ranked this week? 25th. So the Cardinals are going to bring that great guard play to Little John, and the Tigers have just got to figure it out, man. I mean, you can't spin these last three because the last three games have been outscored by 72 points, which is the worst scoring differential over a three-game span by ranked team in AP poll history. That's called since dirt. That's a since dirt, and that's not a good one. Not a good one. So the Tigers need to get it together, and if you're Louisville, you're looking to build, right? We had Carly Jones on the show yesterday. They're feeling good about their win against Duke. They're still waiting to get everybody healthy, including Malik Williams. And again, this should be a very, very competitive and entertaining game tonight.
Yeah. Don't forget, too, Tigers won this game last year at Little John Coliseum. Really kind of Clemson, very important win at the time. And then they went on to beat Florida State at home. They had a win against Duke at home. It feels like a big game for both in some sense, doesn't it, Pac?
Yeah, I mean, for Louisville to build and for Clemson to snap a three-game slot and kind of look like the December Tigers yeah. as opposed to the January Tigers. And, you know, who knows? I mean, Clemson's been hard to figure coming off the pause. They have really, really struggled on both ends of the floor. They're giving up a ton of points. Their defense hasn't been great. Teams are making threes like layups. And so that's got to change if they're going to turn it around.
All right. So if if it's not the Tigers, it's the Wolfpack, right? Let's more be pressure. Honest.
No, well, wow. I think there's more pressure on NC State because they don't have Clemson's December resume. They have to start winning some games. I mean, they've lost four in a row. You mentioned December 30th, the last time they won a game. You know, for a couple of weeks, we never saw them play a game, much less win one. And now you're at home against a team that you're favored against. This is one of those you kind of must hold serve tonight if you're NC State.
Yeah. Now, you can be encouraged about the loss at Chapel Hill because Manny Bates got back on the floor. You know, but it'll take – with NC State now, you're getting a Wake Forest team that probably starting to feel pretty good about themselves.
Oh, sure.
And here's the other thing about the Deacs. It was Isaiah Musius a week ago in Chapel Hill, Ishmael Massoud on Sunday night. Somebody is starting to knock down threes on a consistent basis for Steve Forbes' team. Wake going to play hard. They're going to hustle. They're going to play. Davion Williamson, I thought, you know, did some really good things too. Let's keep an eye on this one tonight. You like NC State? Sure. So does BPI. But Wake Forest now, the Swiss, Pac, this is a perfect game for the Swiss, right?
Well, here's the other thing, too. The answer is yes. Here's the other thing. It's the first home game for NC State in 18 days. Mm. I mean, it's been a while, right? I mean, for the Wolfpack. Yep. And I know home court's totally different this year than ever before. I get all that. But just having the ability to go on a familiar court and play again, and again, you're favored to win, I think there's a lot of pressure on NC State to hold serve tonight. Because if we come back tomorrow, Wes, and Coach Forbes is going back-to-back with W's, I think you'd put a serious flag on NC State because their December resume is not strong enough for them to say, okay, we can go through one of these slides. They got to start winning some games, like I said. You've lost four in a row. You haven't played a whole lot. This really feels like a, I'm not going to say must, but they really, really need to win this game.
I'm going to add one here too, Pac. You don't often say big, but bigger than most because Sunday you're at Syracuse.
Well, they just need to win a game. I mean, yeah, I think it's kind of like Steve Forbes. I mean, you know, their guys played hard. Eventually, you just want to see a little something for the effort. You know, one of the, I think Wake got it. Wake got a taste of it and said, you know what? Feels pretty good. You know, can we get some more of that? Yeah, you can. The way you do that is play hard. And the one thing Wake Forest has done all year is play hard. And that I guarantee it, that's going to happen tonight in Raleigh.
Well, you want to go to Syracuse Sunday and still be empty, that's going to be a problem because the Orange now, after losing at Virginia on Monday night, are going to be sitting there waiting on an opportunity to start throwing threes up again. So, we'll see. It's a big night for Clemson. It's a big night for NC State. And both desperately need to get wins. I mean, we're not breaking any news there, but both need to find a way, no question. We will come back on this show. All right.
You all right?
Lumberjacks are talking to me.
Fine.
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, all good.
Without Clifford walking around knocking over a lamppost and stuff, you know, you're kind of out of your element a little bit today without the cat causing a problem behind the scenes.
Dude, I got lights.
Yeah, you're in a real studio today.
I got a prompter. I get a monitor. I got everything here. This is kind of nice. I'm not kidding. I like this.
Yeah. Without the cat, you're kind of out of sorts a little bit. I mean, you know, you could come over back to the house. I mean, Fuller would love to sit on your feet and make sure you feel right at home, breaking you in a little bit.
I bet he would.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wake me up, too.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. It is a Wednesday. We have guests. We have entertainment value. We have terrible lottery picks.
Oh, do we?
Yes, we do.
Do we?
Yes, we
entertainment
do.
Entertainment value?
Yeah.
We got great guests, by the way.
Yeah.
Great guests.
Yeah. Including, in case you missed it, because I thought Carly Jones yesterday made his debut on the show, Wes.
Yep.
And I'd never spoken to him and enjoyed watching him play, needless to say. But you can just tell the chip on the shoulder, the attitude, the leadership. Hey, I got the ball in my hand. We're good. Right? I mean, you can almost feel it having a 10 or 15 minute conversation with a guy.
Mm-hmm. I am more impressed with him as a person and a player. I had heard a little bit about him because I knew some folks at Radford who told me what kind of kid he was. But the journey for him has been interesting. And I thought some of the answers he talked about, and you'll hear some of this about wanting to play at that level, take that step. There are other guys that are playing in these one-bid leagues who, you know, may want a chance to play in the NCAA tournament and may want to play at the highest level in college basketball. And do they take that chance? But also the fact that he can come be a part of a team that's on the move. And he sensed that in his move to Louisville. And yesterday we started the visit by talking about he and David Johnson as a formidable backcourt. And do you guys, you know, kind of choreographed or script the leadership and the way you're going to try and lead the Cards?
Somewhat. I know we just talk all every day about, you know, what we can do to make each other better. What we see in each other's game that, you know, we might be able to fix or, you know, that we like, you know, getting each other in spots where we both can be successful and score and also do whatever it is for, you know, our team to win. But most of our conversations are just, you know, making sure we're leading these guys right. We got a young group, and we're more of the more experienced guys on the team. So most of our conversations are just, you know, how can we lead better? How can we do better to get this team winning and on a roll again?
Carlique, how big a role then did some of that leadership and some of those intangibles play for Saturday's ball game against Duke? Because, I mean, you knew the stakes. Both teams are coming in on a little bit of a losing streak. It was going to be a big 40 minutes of basketball. It was going to be doubly big for the team that won it.
Right. I think, you know, I feel like our leadership was huge in that game. And I think it started, you know, in practice that week. Just constantly trying to get better. Knowing we came from a two-game losing streak. Knowing that we had another chance to come in and get a victory on our home floor. I think we had a great week of preparation, and then we were on our guys in warm ups, and just throughout the game, just play hard for one another, do what we been doing in practice this week, and just play hard.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot. All right, and I don't mean any disrespect for this question. I want you to give it some thought before you answer. Carlique,
gotcha.
Are you the best point guard at Louisville?
Yeah. I mean, I respect, you know, David and you know, the rest of the players on the team.
Wait. Time out. Dana Evans. Do you know who Dana Evans is?
Yes, I do.
She's pretty good point guard there at Louisville. You may have the best male-female point guard combination in the country. Because, man, I watched you against – I've watched you all year. But when it got to crunch time against Duke, ball was in your hands. When it got to be crunch time when Louisville Wake Forest and the number one women's team in the country was in trouble, Dana Evans had the ball in her hands. You two are – I'm telling you, I don't know if there's a better combination at point in the country than you and Dana Evans, male-female combo. How about that?
I appreciate that for sure, and I definitely agree. Dana Evans is nice. And it's, I guess you could say it's something about them number ones.
That's it.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
Carlique, let's talk about going forward here because you guys draw Clemson now tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. A ball game you're originally supposed to you know, kind of have another opponent. Now all of a sudden, you know, you're going to play Clemson. You know, and then you got other stuff coming up. Next Monday, you get Georgia Tech in the afternoon. I mean, this is all different. So what comes into play for you? What are some of the things that are probably the most important going forward in this era of uncertainty as it relates to schedule and games and opponents and tip times and everything?
I would definitely say taking care of our bodies, you know, staying locked in. Because like you said, at any point, our schedule can change. But I think our biggest thing is staying locked in and having, you know, that hunger every day in practice, you know, coming ready to, you know, practice and practice hard. And just knowing that, you know, at any time, we're going to have to go and play. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, just coming in every practice, intensity, you know, practicing like it's your last. And I think that if we do that and, you know, keep practicing and coming closer as a team, then we'll be fine.
Karlik, what did you guys learn from the Florida State game? Because the Noles are playing lights out, and when you guys get completely healthy, I think that you're going to sit there and look at Virginia and Florida State and go, guess what? We're one of the three best teams in this league. But what did you learn about the Noles last week when they rolled into town and jumped you guys early?
I just learned that they came to play. You always got to be ready to play in this league. And the takeaway that I took from that game is just my leadership has to be better. Mm-hmm. I feel like that game was very unacceptable on our end. I don't think we came ready to play. And I feel like those guys came ready to play. And you know, they threw some punches. And we kind of, you know, took those few punches in the first half and didn't really react right or respond well until it was too late. And by that time, we had a bigger hole. So I would just say that I took away, like, the leadership and actually, like, the readiness of, you know, being ready to play.
Karlik, do you have a handle on when you think this team is going to be completely 100% whole and you got all hands on deck? Do you have any idea what the time frame is there?
Honestly, I don't. I'm honestly just taking it day by day. For the guys who are out, you know, I'm constantly praying for them for the speed of recoveries. Constantly in their ear talking to them, letting them know that, you know, if they need anything, I'm here. And like I said, just, you know, praying and hoping for a speedy recovery. And, you know, not a lot of people are going to, you know, a lot of people are going to try to make excuses for us about, you know, us missing guys and, you know, and don't get me wrong, Malik Williams is a huge part of this team and can make us a whole lot better. But we just got to accept what we have. We got to work with what we have, and we're just going to keep fighting. And hopefully down the road, those guys are able to come back. And I think when we do get everyone back, we'll be a problem.
I do agree with Karlik. I do think Louisville will be a problem if they can get 100% healthy. But tonight, they won't be 100% healthy, and they're on the road at Clemson, a game the Tigers need to win after the three-game slide so far in Louisville.
Yep.
Coming off the big win against Duke, got to feel a little bit better about life after the early setback to Florida State.
Yeah, and it's a scenario where tonight the Cards got to capitalize. Clemson wants to snap the skid. We've talked about that in this first hour. But the Cards want to capitalize on the Duke win and continue the momentum build. That's why the game at 9 o'clock tonight is so very, very intriguing. We got plenty for you in hour two. We got some news. We got some discussion points. And we got guests. Looking forward to having Doug Dowdy, an ACC legend, if you will, from the world of the media, retiring at the end of this week from the Roanoke Times. Look forward to catching up with Doug, who's been with us before. He's covered this league for a long time. And who knows, maybe we'll get him to name, oh, I don't know, three or four best basketball players he's seen live. Maybe put him on the spot. That'd be fun to do at 8:30 Pack, huh?
Well, you know, I don't know about that. We may have to get his better half on the show, too, because she's lining up all the media obligations. I mean, you know, this retirement business, let me tell you, this retirement business It's not just sitting on the couch all day. You got to stay busy. And Doug will join us, and we look forward to it. He's been a great asset to ACC Media, no question.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.